Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Hope everything is good with you and yours wherever you are in the world. I hope you're happy and safe and healthy and all of those things which sometimes we take for granted, but perhaps we shouldn't. It has been an introspective and difficult week for Arsenal. Let's face it, we lost to Crystal Palace on Monday night. A bit of a shock because things have been going so well. Perhaps the kind of result, the kind of performance that makes you remember nothing is done and dusted yet. There's still a lot to do, still a lot of work to undergo. And of course, that work is made a lot more difficult now with the news that Kieran Tierney is out for the rest of the season because he's got to have surgery on a knee problem. What an amazingly upbeat start to the podcast this is. I've got everybody in like the best, cheeriest mood that they could possibly be in. I apologize, but this is what happens. You see, I sit at my desk, I pull the microphone close, not here, but right here. I press record on the software that I use and I just start talking and stuff comes out. And then, you know, I just thought I'd talk about the week that was. But in many ways, I'm a slave to what's happening. You know, I can't just sort of say everything's amazing. And I haven't even mentioned the fact that Thomas Partey could be injured for a while as well. Look, this is the reality. This is what happens when you get to this part of the season. Injuries become more impactful, like something vaguely serious can be a season ender, which of course is a little bit different in April than it is in October. But those words, season ending, season ender, out for the season, they're never any good whenever you get them. But those are things that we are going to have to deal with between now and May. When is the final game of the season? May 23rd, I think it is. I should know this because, of course, I'm going to be there. It'll be my first Arsenal match in a long time. And actually, you have got a chance to watch that game with me and with the guys from the Arsenal Vision podcast in a box at the Emirates, where hopefully, fingers crossed, we can end the season well and, of course, put the final nail in Frank Lampard's managerial coffin. That would be something. If you want details of how to do that, you can visit arsenalvisionpodcast.com. If you donate to their fundraiser, which is raising funds for the Arsenal Foundation, who are raising funds for Save the Children, you automatically get entered into a sweepstakes, and every £5 or every €5, I think it is, that you donate gives you an extra chance to be part of that. So you could watch Arsenal versus Everton on the final day, May 22nd, and hopefully it will be a good day, and it's a great cause to support. And just to remind you as well that this month we are donating every single penny from our Patreon revenue. Every single penny that we get on Patreon is going to be donated to UNICEF, which helps children around the world who are affected by conflict and war in Afghanistan, in Syria, in Yemen, in Gaza, all over the world. So if you sign up for Patreon, you get all the extra stuff, you get all the archives, you get access to everything instantly, and your subscription will go to a really good cause as well, to help kids around the world who aren't as lucky as we are. And I think things like this remind you of just how fantastic the Arsenal online community really is. Of course, there are elements of it which aren't great, but that's true of everything in this world. But when push comes to shove, Arsenal Twitter, Arsenal Online, Arseblog community, Arsenal Vision community can be counted on to dig deep, to be kind, to be generous, to be supportive, to have that touch of Arsenal class, if you like. And it makes me very, very proud to be part of it. And yeah, that's really all I've got to say for that. So if you want to sign up for our Patreon and help donate to UNICEF, you can do that at patreon.com/arsblog. Right, let's get on with the show. There has been plenty going on, obviously, in the wake of the Palace game and the injuries and the team reconfigurations and things that we might do to make sure that this Palace game doesn't resonate and we get back on track quickly at the weekend. With me to talk about all that from goal.com, it's Charles Watts. Hi, Charles.
Hey, Andrew. How you doing, mate?
I'm not too bad, thanks. We've had a few days to sort of decompress a bit about the Palace game on Monday night. It was obviously a very disheartening, disappointing result and performance. With a couple of days to soak it all in, how do you feel about it now? Is it one that worries you in a big way, or do you look at it as slightly anomalous to what came before?
It's a tough one. It's honestly the fallout from it worries me more than the actual performance stroke result, in terms of what it means over the sort of longer term, over the run-in. Just the injuries, I think, are a real issue. You know, losing Tierney and potentially Partey, we don't know the extent of Partey's yet, but I can't imagine it's going to be a quick fix with Partey. We've seen with Tomiyasu's injury, which is a thigh injury, same as Partey. And we saw what happened with Partey last time. You're looking at potentially 6 weeks. And if that's the case again, then that's a real, real problem. And Tierney definitely is a problem. So I think that's what worries me more. Like, it was a bad performance. There's no doubt about it. You can't shirk that. Arsenal started badly. Palace were very good, to be fair to them. And it was just a really bad night. Everything that could have gone wrong kind of did go wrong in that first half. You know, bringing Tavares in, him having another shocker. The injury to Partey in the second half, the fact that Arsenal had chances to get back in the game and just couldn't finish them in the second half as well, because they did have big chances. It was just a really bad night all around. And so, yeah, it was worrying, but I think sometimes you've got to take a little step back as well. You know, Arsenal had won five away games in a row in the Premier League going into that game. So it's not like, you know, it's not like it's coming. I think that's maybe why we've all been so shocked by it, because I don't think any of us expected so much, the performance more than the result. I mean, you looked at that game and you thought, didn't you, that could be a banana skin. It was more the performance that was the shock, wasn't it? It was like, we haven't seen Arsenal beaten like that and played that badly for a long, long time. So no, I think that was the main thing.
That's it, because it was really interesting to hear Mikel Arteta speak afterwards about, like, we talked right before the game about how you have to compete, how you have to be at the level physically to earn the right to play against Crystal Palace and everything else. And I have to say, on the night, I find it a little bit hard with this Arsenal team, because, like, when it's good, I'm almost all in on, like, how good it can be. And when it's bad, I feel like the darkness is closing in again and everything is, you know what I mean? And I'm trying to sort of temper my reaction to things. And certainly when the final whistle went on Monday night, I was like, oh, this is bad. This is really bad. And then having watched the game again a bit and having looked at it and looked at certain aspects of the game, like, it was still bad. Individually and collectively, Arsenal were really bad, but it was far removed from what we've seen in recent weeks from Arsenal. I also think that when Palace go 2-0 up, it's not as if we're consistently under the hammer or anything like that. We played some good football late in the second half, and I know that the game state played a part in that. Palace are sitting off and they're 3-0 up at that point, and like they can just invite us on but there was some good combination play and things like that. So I'm trying to lean in more to the idea that this is something that can happen to any team. As we saw, you know, Chelsea get beaten by Brentford. There are shocks in the Premier League week after week, season after season. There are results and performances like this. So I'm trying to maintain some level of chill, even if Arsenal don't always make that easy.
Yeah, and I think that's the right sort of way to see it, because I think, like I said, I think the reason we're shocked is that we haven't been one of those teams that have been on the end of a shock result for a long, long time, really. We've been going to these games that a lot of us have probably been looking at and thinking, oh, God, it's a banana skin here. Like Aston Villa away, for example. I was looking at that game for a long time and I was convinced Arsenal were going to drop points, and they didn't. You know, they ground it out. It was a really good win. And I think that's why this is the first time it's happened to Arsenal for a while, that it's suddenly been like, oh, no. And like you said, oh, darkness is closing in. Because when one happens, you know, the first thing we think about as Arsenal at the moment is like, oh, no, that's it. Game over. Top four done. We're not going to win for the rest of the season. And You know, I think Saturday's massive. You know, getting back straight away to winning ways is so, so crucial. They can't afford for this to suddenly spiral into a 2-3-4 game run. It has to be straight back on it on Saturday, get 3 points, and then, you know, try and go again. You know, the response is going to be really, really key. And like you said, it was the first half was dreadful. The second half was much, much better. Yeah. And, you know, it had Smith Rowe scored, which he should have done on, I think that was about 55 minutes. Had Odegaard scored, which he should have done on 60 minutes. You suddenly got half an hour there with you're only 2-1 down and you got your tails up. But like I said, everything went wrong. They couldn't finish. You know, they were really, really simple chances that they should have scored. And then you're back in the game. And, you know, the third goal, you know, Partey gets injured. If he's not injured, they don't score that goal because he doesn't do what he doesn't lose the ball. We can't track back. And again, it's just another example where everything possibly could have gone wrong, did go wrong in that game, and Arsenal got punished for it. So it was a bad night. It was a very bad night. And I'm not surprised at the reaction that the defeat has caused, certainly on social media. But I think we've got to, you do have to take a little bit of a step back and think, look, it's not been that bad for a long time.
Yeah.
Let's just focus on Saturday now and get back to winning ways, because it's, you know, Arsenal are still in a decent position. It's not like the top four race is done and dusted. Far from it. They're still in a good position. It's still in their own hands. So it's how they respond now, which is going to be a crucial thing.
I mean, one of the things that struck me about this season is that we have, and maybe under the entire reign of Mikel Arteta, reign is maybe the wrong word, but during Mikel Arteta's time at Arsenal, is having to deal with periods of adversity. Where we all remember that terrible run in the previous season where we went from November or whatever it was, you know, there was like 8 games with 1 win, something like that, in the Premier League, which caused a big problem. But after that, they responded and they finished the season quite well, not in terms of league position. We lost the first 3 games of this season and it was mayhem and everyone was like fearing the absolute worst. And we went on another decent run and we had then a little blip. I think there was a draw with Palace, a draw with Brighton, if you want to call that a blip. Maybe results that weren't quite as good as you would expect against those teams, but we responded. There was the Man United defeat, the Everton defeat, quite how we lost. Everton remains one of the great mysteries of all time. I mean, obviously, the fact that Everton were allowed to stand on the faces of our players played a bit of a part in that. But again, we responded to that. So I think one of the things that I'm hopeful about is that when we have these periods, which aren't great, the recovery is much quicker than it used to be. Like, we're able to compartmentalize the difficult moments much better. And hopefully on the training ground this week, Mikel Arteta will be saying to his players, look, you've got a home game against Brighton. It's going to be tough. Like, every game is going to be tough. We've got to put this one behind us. If he's not letting them get carried away with win after win, away win after away win, he's not going to let them let a bad result or a bad performance against Crystal Palace fester within the squad, is he?
No, not at all. And like you said, I think the way they have responded to bad moments has been really, really encouraging so far. Like I think, like I said, the injuries are a worry, though, because I think there's some really big games coming up, you know, looking a little bit beyond Brighton. Yeah. And, you know, if Thomas Partey is going to be out for a long time, it's going to be really interesting to see what Mikel does now in terms of his formation, how he set things up to sort of cope with the loss of two really influential players. I mean, the Tierney one should be a relatively simple thing, but unfortunately it's happened at a time when Nuno Tavares is pretty much on the floor when it comes to confidence and form. And so that potentially makes that decision a little bit more difficult. But, you know, losing Thomas Partey, that's going to be big, because we've seen since 2020, the turn of the year, basically, he's been very, very good, hasn't he? And it seemed like he got over his injuries. He was, you know, into a rhythm. Him and Xhaka were playing well together. So the loss of him is going to be really, really, you know, we're going to feel that badly. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Mikel does and whether, you know, the players who come in can step up and ensure that you know, the loss isn't felt as much as it could be.
Okay, well, let's talk about those decisions. And like, first, Kieran Tierney is out for the season, having picked up or aggravated an injury that he's carrying or had been carrying while on international duty with Scotland. I mean, I've seen people talk about how maybe, you know, if he was injured, Tierney should have said to Scotland, look, I can't play 90 minutes in 2 games. But basically every player or most players are carrying some kind of ache or strain, aren't they, throughout a season? A little niggle, little ankle strain, little muscle strain, soreness here, there and everywhere because of the, you know, just the demands, the physical demands of top flight football. You know, it's very rare to be 100% fit 100% of the season. What's your understanding of how that injury came to be diagnosed as serious as it was? Like, was it, did he come back from international duty and say, look, my knee's a bit wonky here, or what was it? Were Arsenal aware that he had a knee problem going away with Scotland?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, they knew that he'd been carrying this problem for a while leading up to the international break. And then he went away, and when he came back from it, he said to him, this is beginning to cause me some, you know, real problems. I can really feel it now, sort of worse. So they said, okay, let's go and have a scan. Let's go and see if we can get to the sort of true extent of what's going on. And that's when it was kind of discovered, and they sort of all got together and thought, look, you're going to do a lot more harm than good if you sort of carry on with this now. We're going to have to take action, and you're going to have to go under the knife and get it fixed. And, you know, speaking to people at Arsenal, there's no... there certainly doesn't appear to be any sort of fume at what Scotland have done. You know, Scotland playing him in the two games. You know, I think Arsenal aren't pointing the finger of blame at Scotland at all. It's something that they knew about, and it's just sort of they've come to this decision after the international break. And so I can understand why a lot of fans are looking at it and thinking, why, you know, it's Scotland's fault, but Arsenal don't look at it like that. And so, yeah, there's no anger from Arsenal's point of view towards Steve Clarke or Scotland for the fact he played these two games. It was something that they were aware about.
The decision that Mikel Arteta has to make now about what to do with the left-back position, as you mentioned earlier, is a little bit complicated by Nuno Tavares and his performance the other night, which I think, you know, he was at fault for both goals. I think he could have done better on both occasions. In general, I think he was all right. He wasn't quite as bad or obviously bad as he was in that Nottingham Forest game where he got taken off after about half an hour. And even that night, I don't think he was quite as bad as it was reported in some places. But it is an issue for Mikel Arteta and how he deals with the absence of a senior player like Kieran Tierney, because we had this last season, and what he did was move Granit Xhaka to left back, and it meant a sort of reconfiguring his team in a way, or trying to move many pieces around to solve one particular issue. Like, I think, and people are probably bored of me saying this, but I think last season there was a very obvious one-piece solution, which was Bukayo Saka at left-back. You bring in Nicolas Pepe into the team to play on the right, and there it's not as disruptive to the team. This season we have an obvious replacement for Kieran Tierney, and that is Nuno Tavares. Is the best thing for Mikel Arteta to try and show some faith in this player, to ensure that the disruption to the team in Tierney's absence isn't like dominoes falling, if you know what I mean? So he feels like he can't play Tavares, so he's going to play this guy, and then to offset that, he's going to play this guy, he's going to change system, change formation, maybe go with a back three, whatever it might be. I mean, is the simplest solution the best solution in this case? Much will depend, of course, on how much faith he has in Nuno Tavares. He said the other night that the withdrawal was tactical, which I think is probably fair comment. And he could easily have taken off about five or six other players at halftime if he wanted to make a tactical change. But sometimes the way that you deal with a player's poor performance, you say it's tactical, he's playing badly, he comes off, that's tactical in a way, you know, so you say that publicly so it doesn't look too bad for the player. I mean, how do you view this one, particularly given it's a home game, it's against Brighton, all due respect, etc., etc.? This is not like playing Tavares going into a game at Stamford Bridge or North London Derby at White Hart Lane, whatever it might be. This is a chance maybe for, not quite redemption, but to build his confidence up and maybe see if we can get him back to the level that he did show at times earlier in this season, where he did look quite a promising player.
Yeah, I think you play Tavares, absolutely. I think all the other options are far too disruptive for me. And the reason Tavares was signed in the summer, was for this exact situation, that Arsenal didn't get themselves into the problem they had last year at this point last year when they lost Tierney once again, and it caused all end of trouble because, like you said, they were moving players around out of position. So they went into the summer with a clear agenda in the transfer market of signing a replacement for Kieran Tierney. They've got one. Tierney's injured, so surely now you play him. Yes, he's had a bad couple of games, there's no doubt about it, but we saw at the start of the season that he was a decent, you know, he was a decent player. I mean, he was keeping Tierney out of the team initially with his performances. And then obviously he had a tough game at Liverpool, wasn't it? And then Old Trafford and Tierney came back in, which was the right time to bring Tierney in. But Tavares showed that he can be a, you know, a handful for teams, certainly at the Emirates when Arsenal were playing on the front foot. So I think you stick with him. Yes, his confidence would be low, but I think if you're basically not playing him now when Tierney's injured, then, you know, what sort of message is that sending out to the player himself? And you look at all the other options. I mean, playing Saka at left back now has to be the furthest away option. Literally has to be the last option for me, because you're playing with a central striker who offers no goal threat whatsoever anyway. So you can't move your top scorer out of the attacking, out of the final third. And I know people will say, oh, he can still get attack at left back, but no, you need Saka in that final third as much as possible at the moment. So that's a no for me. You could switch Cedric over there, but then you're probably moving Ben White out of central defence and bringing Rod Holding in. Again, that's really disruptive. You could play three at the back, but, you know, maybe that's kind of an option. Then you can play Tavares as a left wing back, which limits his defensive responsibilities. But then I don't see where Odegaard really fits in. He's not going to have that freedom with a sort of 3-4-3 formation. It's just all too disruptive. You've got a left back there. You've got Tierney's understudy there. So you've got to play him when he's injured. Surely that has to be the route for Arteta to go down. And, you know, you can't even move Granit over there now because you've lost Thomas Partey. And so you can't play midfield without Thomas Partey and Granit Xhaka. So I think it has to be. You've got to show some trust and some faith in Tavares now. It's about Arteta's man management for me, because Tavares would have certainly been hurt after that at Monday night, given it came on the back of what happened at Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
And it's about man managing him now and sort of trying to get his confidence up, showing some trust in him and playing him on Saturday and trying to get him through this bad run of form.
Yeah, I mean, he did trust him earlier in the season because he did make a mistake and then he kept faith with him for the next game. And maybe he spoke about him, or it could have been Albert Sambi-Lokonga, who had a similar mistake and he kept faith with him for the next game. And it was like, okay, you've made a mistake, but it's not the end of the world. And I do think you're right. Like, if you can't play him against Brighton, and if you can't play him against Southampton, for example, then there's no way you can play him in bigger games. And Arsenal have got Chelsea, they've got United, they've got Spurs, they've got West Ham coming up, you know, big, big games against teams around us, which he may find more difficult than those. But look, I think it's as simple as, like, if he can't do it against Brighton and Southampton, then you've really got to think about a different solution. But maybe you've got to give him a chance to show that he can do it. And maybe the Partey injury, at the time of recording, we don't quite know what the seriousness of that injury is. But does that in some ways simplify the situation? Because, like you say, you can't use Granit Xhaka. I think the obvious replacement for Partey is Lokonga, as we saw the other night when he made the change in the second half. He didn't bring on a safety player. He brought on Lokonga. So it looks like that is the like-for-like replacement, even if they're not necessarily like-for-like players. But I think what you probably have to do is slightly tweak your system in that you're not going to ask Lokonga to do exactly what you're asking Partey to do, which is shoulder a lot of that deep-lying work on his own, pushing Granit Xhaka further forward, which has been talked about over the last number of weeks. You're probably going to have to move Granit Xhaka back in midfield a little bit to support Lokonga, but also maybe to offer a bit more protection and some support to Tavares as well. So while the Partey injury is obviously a big blow, it kind of, at least for these next two games, simplifies the decision-making process for Mikel Arteta when it comes to his team selection.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd be really disappointed if I turned up on Saturday and Elneny's starting in midfield. I think you've got to go with Sambi for this one. You know, I thought he played well, Sambi, at the start of the season, and he certainly played a lot more minutes than Arsenal were sort of expecting or had planned for him at the start, after they wanted to give him time to sort of settle in and adjust. And he kind of got thrown straight in because of what was going on with Thomas Partey. He's been taken out of side for a fair while now, but you know, he's had a lot of time to get used to things and, you know, work on the training ground. And, you know, he's a good player, Sambi. You kind of look at his stats as well. And, you know, what he did at the start of the season, it ranks pretty highly. You know, he wins the ball back. He's quite good in the final third. He's got a decent final pass on him. And I think you absolutely do that. You move, like you said, Granit just drops into that deep line midfield role that Thomas has been playing in. and you just move Sambi up sort of alongside Odegaard and stick with this 4-3-3. I think everything else at this stage of the season, when the team are so used to playing this system in this way, everything else is just, it's just too disruptive. Mm. It's quite actually quite simple, isn't it? I think certainly from the way it feels like me and you are looking at it, is it is just Tavares, Sambi, get on with it and try and get back to winning ways on Saturday.
And it can take sometimes a young player, like, because you say he was in the side earlier on in the season because of what happened with Thomas Partey in preseason. He got injured in that game against Chelsea and missed the first few weeks of the season. And then, of course, Granit Xhaka got injured, so he's in the team more regularly then. But sometimes, you know, when you are a young player, you come to a new club, you've got to learn the Premier League. We know it can take players a while to get up to speed. Not always, but, you know, different players take different periods of time to acclimatize to English football, to a new club, to a new country, all that kind of stuff. You know, sometimes a player having a bit of time off is the right thing, but taking a time out from the team, you know, he's been kept out of the team because Xhaka and Partey have been good, not necessarily because he himself has been bad, you know what I mean? He hasn't really been needed, but he's had time to assess, time to take stock, time to look at what those guys are doing on the pitch, the way they train, the way they operate, the way they function together as a partnership, and I'm sure it has developed and created a real hunger in him to get back on the pitch and to start playing regularly, because he was a regular player for Anderlecht and he's come to Arsenal and he's been slightly peripheral over the last 3 or 4 months. You know, I think he's had one Premier League start since November, and that is because Partey got that crazy red card in the EFL Cup against Liverpool when he'd just come back from AFCON. So if you're looking for positives, you're thinking, okay, he's had time to think about things. He's coming in, he's got fresh legs. He's not fatigued. He won't be carrying injuries. He'll be ready to give it, you know, everything for 90 minutes for 9 games. Maybe he won't be needed for that many, but it is a chance for a young player to come in and say, okay, the start to my Arsenal career was all right, and now it's time to show people what I can do.
Absolutely. And he'll have one eye on the World Cup as well, you know, because he's right on the cusp of Roberto Martinez's Belgium team. He's kind of had a couple of call-ups, hasn't he? So he'll have his eye on that. And it's a really big opportunity for him. This is what he came to Arsenal for. And we saw enough in those kind of flashes at the start of the season from him to suggest he's a very decent player. And that's why Arsenal signed him. And I, you know, I like him. I have to say, everything that I've seen from him so far for a young kid who's relatively inexperienced, certainly in, you know, a top level league, I like him. I think he's got a lot about him, and he's only going to get better. And you know, this is his chance. That's why he came to Arsenal, isn't it? He's got a hell of an opportunity here at a really crucial stage of a season. He's got some big games coming up that he might have to play in, and he's got a chance to really sort of, you know, put some pressure on Granit and Thomas Partey. And who knows what's going to happen with Granit in the summer anyway? So, you know, this is what he's here for. And I'm looking forward to seeing him over the next few games. I've got to say, you know, I'm slightly worried about the left back situation, but in terms of the midfield and certainly seeing Sambi, I think, you know, I'm quite excited to see what he can produce.
Yeah, it's about seeing a new partnership, like you say. Xhaka and Elneny, we've seen plenty of times before. We know what it can do. We know what it can't do.
It can't do a lot. No, I don't want to see that at all. I really don't want to see that at all. I'll be really disappointed. Look, Mo's been a, you know, fair play to him. Everyone likes him. He's been good to have around. But Mo's going in the summer.
Yeah.
For the last 9 games now, we are not seeing Granit and Mo Elneny in midfield.
No. I wasn't saying we should, but I was trying to be diplomatic about the situation. But you know, we are trying to build for the future, and it is about like investing minutes in players. Like, even if, you know, it doesn't go as well as we would like, if you give Sambi these 7, 8, 9 games, whatever it is, it's stock in the bank, isn't it, for next season? It's development time. It's all, you know, it's beneficial. So, you know, I'm curious to see how he operates alongside Granit Xhaka. Here's a question. We talked about investing in the future, players who aren't going to be here next season, and it leads me to Alex Lacazette and the decisions that we've discussed already that we feel are relatively simple. In our uninformed opinions, are relatively simple. When Mikel Arteta thinks about things, maybe he doesn't see it that way. But what about the striker situation? What about how he deals with a centre forward who just doesn't score goals and whose contribution in some of the other aspects of the play that he's been given plenty of credit for aren't really at the level that they were. You know, he struggles to impose himself. He struggles to drop deep and get in the box. I mean, it was amazing watching Karim Benzema against Chelsea drop into midfield, play a forward pass, turn, sprint into the box, and get on the end of a header. It's like, this guy's 34. Lacazette's only 30. You know, we probably should expect more from a centre forward than we're getting from him. But of course, the situation is complicated by lack of options or perceived lack of options. Like, I think in normal circumstances, a striker who hasn't scored a goal from open play in over 4 months doesn't get picked.
Oh, you're spot on. I read your blog yesterday and I thought it was absolutely spot on. And it's, it's a worry. You know, I've been in support of Laka quite a bit this season. And I thought he was playing pretty well, although he wasn't scoring. But like you said, the things that he was doing very, very well, he's just not doing now and hasn't done it for a fair while. You know, you go back about 6 weeks till he was really, or a month maybe, but it's, you know, he's not really contributing in any way. I can't imagine the Crystal Palace centre-backs will have an easier day or night than they had against Lacazette on Monday night. And that's a real, real concern. Because if he's not contributing in the way that he was, like you said, as in dropping in, you know, linking up, playing the wide men in and setting up chances, then what's he in the team for? Because he's not scored an open play goal since Southampton, has he? It's just two penalties since then, the Norwich and Leicester goal. Although you could technically say he scored against Wolves, but
I was happy to give him credit for that because he was there and he forced the error and everything else.
It is a concern. And like you said, in any other area of the pitch, on any other player, maybe if it's not captain, you're looking at what he's producing and you're thinking you've got no right to be in the team because you're not doing it. No goals in whatever it is from open play in 4 months. I mean, it's just not good enough. And there is a lack of options. I know, I accept that, but I'd be very, very tempted if I was Arteta to try something a little bit different with the forwards on Saturday, because you just can't persist with absolutely no goal threat in the central areas. Surely you just can't keep going. You've got to try something different. I mean, this is Arsenal's decision, and I'm not going to have a go at the whole Aubameyang situation. I think Arsenal are right to do what they did in January. I thought they got to the point where it had to be done. My issue with it was that they couldn't find anyone anywhere that they could bring in, at least have another option in January. I think that's where they messed up when it comes to the transfer window. It wasn't letting Orba go. It was just not finding someone to at least be another option to Lacazette in that central role. And obviously there's Eddie, but he's in the same. He's going away. And I thought Eddie did all right when he came on Monday night. So. Obviously, he scored. And so you've got to try something. If it's Martinelli as a central striker, if it's just starting Eddie, which, you know, Arteta has done before. I don't think if you can just continue to play Lacazette just because he's Lacazette, if he's not producing. And it is a big, big concern. And I think we all thought it in January, didn't we, when Orba went and no one came in and you kind of looked at who you were going to be up against in the race for the top four. You look at Tottenham and you got that genuine, you know, world-class star quality in the striking department and people are going to score your goals and they're scoring goals now. And you just wondered if Arsenal were going to end up coming short because of a lack of goals. And that's a concern at the moment. And for me, on Saturday, I'd be trying something a little bit different because I just don't think Lacazette has been playing well enough to warrant a place in the starting 11 continuously.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it's important, you know, even if you do have a small squad and your options are relatively limited, you still have to remind players, or players need to be aware, that form is an issue. Form is what dictates your place in the team. Like, if it was Saka who wasn't playing well, or Smith Rowe wasn't playing well, or Partey wasn't playing well, I know none of them played particularly well the other night, but what they have is, you know, a track record of months of good performances behind them. And it's not to say Lacazette hasn't contributed. Of course he has. But it's the most important part of his job, which is getting in the box, making runs, taking shots, scoring goals. He's just really not doing that, you know, in any effective way at this moment in time. And look, if you make a change, it doesn't have to be permanent. It doesn't mean he can't start. It doesn't mean he can't come off the bench. It doesn't mean he doesn't have a part to play. But I do really think that when teams are looking at Arsenal right now, they kind of know what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And that's, as James said on the Arscast Extra on Monday, that's not necessarily a bad thing if what you do is so devastating and effective that even when the opposition know, they can't do anything about it. It is a problem when it becomes pedestrian and predictable and routine, and it's easy to play against. And I think the harsh reality of this is that Lacazette is easy to play against. Anderson and Gehi the other night, meet and drink, they really didn't have a great deal to worry about. And Anderson ended up with two assists. You know, he was so happy getting forward and all that kind of stuff. So I was
pining for Mateta on Monday night. I was looking at what Mateta was doing to our centre-backs, and I was just thinking, it's got this bad that I'm desperate for Arsenal to have Mateta up front at the moment, who would at least be causing them problems and bullying them a little bit and putting himself about and getting in the box. And yeah, it's something needs change. I'd be going with Martinelli on Saturday, I have to say. You know, I thought Martinelli, when he came on, he was great on Monday night. I thought he caused Palace problems. And yes, he's not going to hold the ball up. He's not going to link others like Lacazette can, although he hasn't been doing recently. But he's going to give those centre-backs, no matter, even if he doesn't play that well, he's going to give those centre-backs on Saturday a difficult job. He's going to be on them non-stop. He's going to be causing problems, harrying them, trying to force a mistake. He's going to be in the box, which is the essential thing. He's going to be there in the central areas in the box. So, and then you can just play Smith Rowe on the left, and you got Odegaard, Smith Rowe, Saka, Martinelli all playing in that final third. And I think if you did that, if Brighton saw that team sheet at 2 p.m. on Saturday, they'd be more worried than if they see Lacazette playing on Saturday.
I think that's absolutely right. And what Martinelli does is obviously different to what Lacazette does. The movement, though, and the harrying and the hassling and the hard time that he might give those central defenders, plus the ability to run in behind, which Lacazette doesn't have. I mean, I think the tactic was, and it did work occasionally, was that Lacazette would drop deep, pull a central defender with him, and then somebody else can run in behind, as we saw, let's say, with Martinelli a few times, maybe in that Leeds game in particular. But, you know, it's just too easy now. I think I'd be with you in that I would like to see Martinelli play up front. Again, these are minutes that are going to go to a player who's going to be with us next season. Mm-hmm. You know, that's maybe an important consideration. If this doesn't work with Martinelli, maybe it also gives you some clarity about what you need to do in the summer as to, you know, how many players you need to bring in those forward positions. Because if Martinelli can slot in and show, okay, I can be a genuine option here, maybe not against all opposition or all teams or all systems, but if he provides you with a proper option at centre forward, then maybe it has an impact on what you need to do in the transfer market as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think we've seen enough from Martinelli that there are clearly question marks about him as a long-term central striker. But, you know, the odd game there, he can cause problems. And I think he needs to work on his end product a little bit. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, he can score goals, and he's just going to give defenders a problem. We know that. No matter where he plays on the pitch, left wing, right wing, centre forward, defenders will hate playing against him. And he does offer you that running behind option, which Arsenal just do not have at the moment. And yeah, I'm with you. I think on Saturday that's the way to go. To be honest, I don't think he'll do it. I think it'll be Lacazette, but it would certainly be the option that I would go for.
Do you think people will say, look, with Partey injured, and he's a senior player. I mean, I think one of the aspects that we haven't really discussed about Thomas Partey is, like, you can have the debate about experience and inexperience or youth and seniority or whatever it might be. But at the end of the day, when you do have some players in the side who are experienced, who've been there, who've done that, who've played in big games and been, you know, at the business end of a league season, like Thomas Partey has been with Atletico Madrid, you know, throughout his career in Spain, that kind of experience is useful. Similarly, Kieran Tierney had those seasons, even though he's only 24, he had them in Scotland with Celtic. You know, it's not quite the same, not quite as competitive maybe, but he's been there, he's done that, he's worn that particular T-shirt. And some people might say, well, look, if you lose Tierney, if you lose Partey, if you lose that experience, you can also lose the experience of Lacazette as well. Do you think that should be a factor in the decision making, or should it really just come down to the form of a player and what he is contributing?
I think it's got to come down to the form of the player. You can't, experience doesn't score your goals. Experience doesn't win you the 3 points, does yeah. it? Experience doesn't, at the moment, experience doesn't even get you in the penalty area. So I think, you know, I just don't really go with that argument. No, I you know, we've seen what these youngsters can do. Arsenal have chosen to have a young squad with a little bit of experience mixed into it. This is the route they've decided to go down. So this is the route they've got to try and win with. And I think right now their best chances to win, or the best chances to score goals and or kill, cause teams problems in the final third, is by going with some of the younger players they've got and taking Lacazette out. Like you said, he can come back for the crucial games if needs be. If Martinelli does play there and it doesn't work, then you sort of bring Lacazette back, but at least you've given it a chance, and at least you've shown to Lacazette that, look, you're not guaranteed starter in this starting 11. You've got to, if you want to stay in it, you've got to start producing. You've got to start getting in the box and scoring goals, because that's your job.
Do you worry, like, subconsciously, and I'm not casting any aspersions on Lacazette's professionalism. Similarly with Eddie, as you say, came on the other night. I thought he looked quite bright. I thought his movement was quite good. I mean, I wouldn't be 100% shocked if Nketiah started against Brighton. But do you think that their contractual situations play a part at all in the performances? I know it's not something that consciously they will be thinking of, but I guess there comes a point where if you're considering your future and you're thinking about, well, what happens in June? Like, this season has got like a few weeks to go, and then maybe I've got to find a new football club. Does it have an impact on the way you play, on your commitment, on your willingness to run, to potentially pick up an injury, which might then impact what you can do in the summer? You're a free agent, but if you're knackered, nobody wants you. You know, that kind of way. Does that worry you at all, or do you think that's just me overthinking things?
I don't know. I mean, it's tough for me to answer because I'm not in that situation of having to play for a contract, professional contract. But I don't think so. I haven't seen, you know, Lacazette, it doesn't, you know, I'm not watching him in the last few weeks thinking he's down tools. I'm just looking at him thinking he's just not very good at the moment. He's just not on form. He's not, and maybe teams have worked him out a little bit. Like you said before, in that sort of run over Christmas and the start of January, and he was dropping into that hole and everyone was sort of running off him and he was doing the flicks around the corner. I think teams have kind of worked that out a little bit, as that's how Arsenal are playing. And that's probably why we're seeing, you know, the effect he's having on matches has been limited. So I don't really see that, really. And I think Eddie, to be fair, in the last few games when he's come off the bench, has looked brighter than he had done beforehand. You know, I thought he was obviously very important to the win against Wolves fairly recently. I thought, again, on Monday night, he was bright. Could have scored, really unlucky to score. Done it. Eddie scoring from 30 yards, that's the absolute end of the world stuff. I don't think so. I mean, it's obviously there is an issue there, and this is what happens when you let players' contracts run down. But I haven't really seen any evidence of it with those two that might be something that's happening.
All right, just very finally, I mean, we've got 9 games to go. It is in our hands, so to speak, the top 4. It does feel like we're going to need a little bit of a hero to emerge from this group of players. Somebody who's going to maybe nick those goals. If you remember Freddie Ljungberg scoring some goals late in the season, it was just like, oh, there he is again. Oh, he did it again. It's a lot to sort of put on one particular individual, but given the way that we're playing and given the way that this season is going, it kind of feels a little bit like that to me, that somebody in these final few weeks is going to have to make a real mark from an attacking sense to get us the points and get us the wins that we need.
Yeah. Oh, God, what I'd do for a 2002 Freddie Ljungberg right now. Just take him out of there. Maybe with Bergkamp as well behind him. Drop him into this.
Yeah, that'd be kind of handy, wouldn't it? Yeah.
It would be very nice. just watch and repeat every game, wasn't it? Bergkamp, Ljungberg, goal.
Yeah.
Job done. I mean, someone's going to have to step up. I was hoping that Lacazette was going to be that man. I have to admit, I was sort of looking at him thinking, you know, can he be the hero before he leaves in the summer? Can he just get 5 or 6 goals? Clearly doesn't look like that's going to be the case. And you have to look at Saka, really, for me. I mean, he's the guy who's kind of done it so far. He's top scorer at the moment. And if anyone's going to do it, I think it's most likely to be him. I mean, it'd be fantastic if it was Martinelli. I mean, what that would do for him and, you know, for the long term, for next season, if he could get a chance and take it and score 5 or 6 goals between now and the end of the season, it'd be absolutely fantastic. But this is a time when someone's got to make himself a hero, isn't it? This is a crucial stage of the season. This is when people will, like, step up. You talk about Freddie back then, that run in 2001-2002. You know, he just took it on by himself. And so many games that were tight, it was him. I'll never forget the West Ham game that towards the end of that season when at Highbury, and it was 2-0 in the end, him and Carney scored. And, you know, Arsenal played really badly that night. And I think Canute had scored one that wasn't given, like Kohler cleared it off the line. It was miles over the line and the referee didn't give it. And, you know, Arsenal could have lost that game. And then out of nowhere, Freddie stepped up, won that game. He did it at Bolton soon after. And he made himself a hero, and he's a hero forevermore at Arsenal, basically, because of that, what he did towards the end of that season. And someone's got to try and do that. And unfortunately, we haven't, you know, Freddie Ljungberg's don't grow on trees, but no. There are players who can score goals in this team. They've showed it this season, and hopefully one of them can step up, because it's some really big games coming up.
I feel like we're overdue a Pepe contribution this season. I know he's been on the bench a great deal, and his substitute appearances have ranged in quality, it's fair to say, in the last few weeks. He was very, very good when he came on against Wolves and pretty poor when he came on against Aston Villa. But if you're looking for somebody who is capable of influencing a game in the final third, producing something a bit special, I mean, he's got it, doesn't he?
Well, there's an argument he's the best finisher at the club, really. And the way he ended last season, you know, if he could do that again this season, it'd be absolutely fantastic. But I thought he was a big miss on Monday night. I think he would have definitely been on fairly early on if he had been. And there's an argument, I've seen people say it. And I don't think Pepe's a central striker by any means. And I've kind of thought to myself at times, that can't be an option. But then I saw someone saying it the other day, I can't remember where it was. And it was like, if Pepe had started every game that Lacazette started since the turn of the year as a central striker, it would be a very safe bet that he'd have scored more than 2 penalties in that time. He would have been scoring goals in open play. And so, I mean, he is potentially an option there, as much as it doesn't really fit it, and he is more of a wide player. You know, he would score goals, you would think, if Pepe got the chances and the starts that Lacazette has been getting. Pepe would score. So, you know, does Arteta trust him? That's the big thing. And
yeah,
you have to look at it right now and think, he doesn't really trust him, and that's the issue there, wouldn't it?
No, I mean, he doesn't trust him. Certainly he doesn't trust him from a defensive point of view, because when he came on against Villa a few weeks ago, like within minutes, Arteta was screaming at him from the sidelines because whatever instructions he'd been given were not being carried out. But where Pepe is most effective is in the box, or certainly around the box. You know, you can think of a number of goals that he scored at the near post, for example, by making that kind of run and being there for the cutback. I think there was one against Manchester United. Was that maybe Arteta's first win? I can't quite remember.
Yeah,
you know, those kind of goals, that, like, I'm not saying he's a penalty box presence, but if you're in a position where, you know, you're a goal down and you've got 15 minutes to go, I mean, it's a bit of a Hail Mary, but it's better to have that than nothing at all.
Yeah, yeah. And I think he will get chances between now and the end of the season, definitely. It's just, you know, it's a shame he missed Monday with that illness, but hopefully he'll be back on Saturday. And I think he'll certainly come into the equation. He needs to. I mean, £72 million player. You want, you know, the club should be able to use him between now and the end of the season to get you some goals. So, yeah, I mean, he showed at the end of last season when he had that run what he can do. I think what he finished, I think it was 17 goals last season. He was only one behind Lacazette. He was nearly top scorer last year. So, and he is a very, very good finisher when he gets on that left foot. So he's definitely an option. And, you know, I'd expect Arteta to use him quite a bit between now and May.
All right. Well, fingers crossed the hero emerges in these last 9 games. We leave it there for now. Charles, as ever, thanks very much.
Thanks, Andrew. Have a good day, mate.
Thank you very much indeed to Charles. You can find him on Twitter. He is @Charles_Watts, @Charles_Watts. And he writes about Arsenal and other football stuff for Goal.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Right, well, since we recorded that little chat, Arsenal's medical team have provided an update on Thomas Partey. This is what they said. Our number five was substituted during Monday night's game against Crystal Palace at Selhurst Park after aggravating his right thigh. Thomas has since received further assessments and a subsequent scan has shown muscle damage to his right thigh. We will continue to assess Thomas in the coming weeks, during which time he will also receive further specialist consultations. So clearly he's going to be out for a few weeks at least. I'm not quite sure what to make of the fact that they haven't put a specific time frame on it. Is it a case they just don't know? Do they not want to release that information at this moment in time? Are they hoping he will be back? Did they just not want to announce two key players out for the season in 1 week? Which I could kind of understand. Nevertheless, it's not great news for Thomas Partey. It's not great news for Arsenal or Arsenal fans, but what can we do? We've just got to get on with it. We don't have any choice, and hopefully it will be an opportunity for Albert Sambi-Lokonga to step up and see what he can do on a consistent basis. And I guess for everybody in the team, when you're missing key players, you've just got to redouble your efforts. You've got to work harder, do that extra bit of running to offset the quality that we have lost. And that is a lot of quality in 1 week, Kieran Tierney and Thomas Partey. Fingers crossed Partey will be back before the end of the season, because I think we might need him. And hopefully by the time he comes back, there's still something significant and tangible to play for. So yeah, keep everything crossed for that. Right, I think we'll leave it there for today. Remember that later on Patreon we will have a preview podcast, as we do for every Premier League game, looking ahead to the fixture against Brighton on Saturday afternoon, one in which we need to take 3 points, get ourselves back on track. You can join myself and Lewis Ambrose over on Patreon, patreon.com/arsblog. We will have that for you at some point on Friday afternoon. For now though, thank you as ever for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your continued support in all the ways that you provided. It's hugely appreciated, and we're very, very grateful. So until the next one, take it easy, folks. Cheers. Bye-bye. Welcome back to Talk Shite Radio, talking shite about sport 24 hours a day. It is an incredible Premier League weekend, and for the latest team news, as Arsenal look to get back on track, we go over to our reporter, Steed Boombox.
It is shaping up to be a very difficult day for Mikel Arteta and his men. Rocked by injury news this week to Kieran Tierney and Thomas Partey, both of whom are out for the season. As are Aaron Ramsdale, Takahiro Tomiyasu, Ben White, Rob Holding, Mohamed Elneny, Nicolas Pepe and Alexandre Lacazette. While Granit Xhaka has been suspended for 3 games for not being sent off, with referees absolutely convinced he did something to warrant a red card, but they couldn't see it, so he's been accused of dark magic. Nevertheless, there is some good news for Arsenal fans. Out of retirement today to take a place in midfield comes inanimate carbon rod. We can already see the In Rod We Trust banners in the away end here, and Mikel Arteta will be hoping he can bring some of his world-renowned to the Gunners today. Back to you in studio.
Steve Boombox reporting live from Crovisson Park, right here on Talkshite Radio, talking shite about sport 24 hours a day. We are going to take a commercial break. When we return, Matt Letizia is in studio to tell us why Lord Lucan assassinated JFK, and more stories from his new book, Jet Fuel Can't Melt Steel Beams.
Talkshite Radio, talking shite about sport 24 hours a day. 24 hours a day.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.